Ama gyanate merandasya gananjana sabakaya çakşuvam minidam yine tasma şi gurave namaha. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum nangayate garin hakri patam aham bandhe şi gurun dinatananam. Nama om vishnu padaya krishna pristaya vutale. Srimati bhakti vidanta swaminiti namane. Namaste saraswati devi gauravani pacharane nirvishesha shanyavadi paschacade satarane. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. How to begin. So I'm going to speak on a topic that I have spoken about in many places. And Giriraj Maharaj had heard somebody had posted a recording of the talk that I had given on the East Coast when I arrived in America a few weeks ago. And somehow we were discussing it. And throughout many places that I've been speaking on this topic, devotees have been approaching me and thanking me, saying that the topic was relevant. So I thought it might be beneficial to speak about a relevant topic. And hopefully, the topic may be relevant to some of you. And I think some of you may even, I think Nagapattinam, I spoke about it in Kiev also. No, in Ukraine. Yes, I spoke about it in Ukraine. That's where I started speaking about it, actually. So, I don't know how I'll cover everything, because sometimes it takes about 4 days. I mean, not 24 hours a day, but 4 continuous segments of lectures to cover the topic. So I can broach the subject this evening and try to summarize some of the important points. And it's actually under the category of patience, although there are many other important instructions given beyond simply patience. But the core message is how a practitioner of devotional service has to be patient. And what does that patience mean? Does he simply grit his teeth and bear it? Or does he not do anything and just wait for a lightning bolt to come from the sky, which is a direct manifestation, he may be, of Krishna's mercy? Or what does he do in the meantime? While he's being patient, still some effort is required for him to achieve the particular goal which he aspires for. So it assumes, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur presents this topic here in Sri Bhakti Loka, he assumes that the persons or the readers on this topic are sadhakas. And in fact, throughout this book, he even oftentimes states, "O sadhakas," which means that he's specifically speaking to those who are practitioners who are performing sadhana, which means some form of meditation and worship in an attempt to fix the mind on Krishna daily. I guess that may be a very simplistic way of presenting it. There's certainly more detailed way of presenting it, but as we said, we're going to try to present this in a way that's, it covers the essence of the topic without going into that much detail. And it's beneficial for sadhakas, but even those who may not be sadhakas may find that the information contained within is very relevant. Because everybody should have some goal. And a sadhaka is usually somebody who has established Krishna as the goal, and as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in this chapter on patience, a sadhaka is somebody usually establishes as his goal, or the fruit of his sadhana, as to obtain Krishna's pleasure from his service. And there are different types of practitioners. There are those who are karmis, those who are jnanis, and those who are bhaktas. And he says, and I'll read this, because it is contained, it is sort of like the summary of this message, because, and I'll read it directly. He says, those who engage in sadhana desire to attain results. Karmis hope to attain heavenly happiness by fruitive activities. Jnanis hope to attain liberation by speculative knowledge. And devotees hope to please Krishna by their devotion. Being impatient due to prolonged sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Therefore, a practicing devotee who desires to achieve his goal attains that result only when he is patient. And then he defines, gives one definition. Quote, Krishna must be merciful to me either today or after 100 years or in some other birth. I will take shelter of his lotus feet with determination and never leave. This type of daya or patience is most desirable for the practitioners of devotional service. So, he's stating that the goal of the bhakta, he has established some goal, the bhakta wants some result, he wants Krishna to be pleased by his devotion. That is the result. Oftentimes we hear that bhakti yoga means the devotee is not interested in results. So this may seem contradictory. If the bhakti yogi is not interested in any result, then why is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking about result? But the result that the bhakti yogi is aspiring for is he wants Krishna to be pleased by his devotion, which is a selfless result. He wants Krishna. He wants to please Krishna. And sometimes it is not such an easy thing to do. In fact, there are many statements in scripture. One which oftentimes comes to my mind is a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes, which is spoken by Prahlad Maharaj. He's speaking to his friends. He says, "Oh, my dear friends, you cannot please the Supreme Lord. Even if you become expert Brahmins, advanced in etiquette and knowledge, nor by austerities, nor by great sacrifices, nor by accepting vows, nor by chastity, none of these things can awaken the Lord's pleasure." And then he concludes his statement by saying, "The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching unalloyed devotion to Him. That's it. Without sincere devotional service, everything else is simply a show. Now that's pretty exclusive and almost like, I know, it cuts me out. I don't know about you, but it feels like, well, that cuts me out. Where do I stand? Not by austerities, not by chastity, great sacrifices, accepting vows, being expert Brahmin, vast in knowledge of learning. None of these things will please Krishna. So, anyways, this verse, I quote it only to give evidence that it's not such an easy thing for Krishna to be pleased if the only thing that awakens his pleasure is unflinching, unalloyed means pure devotional service. What to do under those circumstances until one actually achieves that stage? And that's the goal of the sadhaka. Sadhaka has a goal. Sadhaka is somebody who wants some fruit. He wants Krishna to be pleased by his devotion. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here, well, you better be patient. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, that Krishna's pleased. Although, we should not think that it's not possible to do something in the meantime until one gets to that stage, which will help one along that path to one day getting to the point where Krishna is pleased. And that's, I only introduce that as the essence of this essay about patience. That, yes, it's possible to do something and actually to make progress and to actually someday get that fruit, which is a fruit, bhajaniya parama sukha matra susukadvam, as explained, Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam, to the degree that Krishna is pleased, then we experience pleasure. It's one of the benefits of awakening Krishna's pleasure is that we don't have to make any extraneous effort to become pleased. Krishna's so pleased with pure unalloyed devotional service that he gives himself. And what better fruit to achieve or obtain? You know, I oftentimes give that example from the Bhagavatam about how Krishna tells Durvasa Muni that Durvasa Muni, it's a long story, I won't go into it because I want to get back to patience, and I'm not going to speak long tonight either. But how Durvasa Muni was concerned because he was being sort of punished by the Lord, because the Lord had invoked Sudarshan Chakra to punish him because he had offended Maharaj Ambarish. So he came back to the Lord after being chased by Sudarshan Chakra and looking for many places to find relief. He went to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma couldn't help him. He went to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva couldn't help him. And then he went to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu said, sorry, I can't help you either. And he explained the reason why. He said, I can't help you because I'm not independent. I'm under the control of my devotee. And he said, the devotee is always in my heart, and I am always in the heart of the devotee. The devotee doesn't know anyone but me, and I don't know anyone but him. So Durvasa Muni, sort of like, tried to go a little bit deeper and said, wait a minute, certainly you're the Supreme Lord. If you see a person suffering, like I'm suffering, and he's coming to take shelter of you, what do you mean? You can't do anything about it. You're the one who invoked the Sudarshan Chakra in the first place. Why can't you do something about it? And the Lord told him, that said, the nature of my devotee is such that he takes me into his heart and he serves me very carefully in his heart, and he's only thinking about me and service to me and pleasing me. And because I'm a person, I want to give something in return to him. So I ask him, let me give you something. And the devotee says, I don't want anything. And the Lord explained, you know, that because my devotee doesn't want anything, he's always just asking just for the opportunity to serve. That's what makes him happy. Just let me serve you. Let me please you. That's all I ask. So he's explaining this to Durvasa Muni, because Durvasa Muni is trying to understand, look, I'm suffering. I'm coming to you for shelter. And you're the Supreme Lord. You can do anything. And what are you telling? Why are you saying that you can't give me protection? Have a heart. Can't you think about my suffering? And the Lord says, sorry, I don't have a heart. And I can't think about your suffering. What do you mean you don't have a heart? You can't think about my suffering. He said, I just told you. I just told you that my devotee takes me into his heart and I'm there. And every time I ask my devotee, can I give you something? He doesn't want anything. So, therefore, I still want to give him something even though he doesn't want anything. So what can I give him that's of any value? Doesn't want wealth. Doesn't want power. Doesn't want position. He's not interested in any of these things. I tried. I asked. He doesn't want it. So I have to give him the most valuable treasure in my storehouse. I gave him my heart. So you're coming to me and say, have a heart? And I'm telling you, I don't have one. He's got it. You want my heart? You got to go to him. He has it. So that's the position. The Lord, I mean, that's how powerful it is when you have bhakti. The Lord says, okay, you have me. You have my heart. You got everything. You got everything in the storehouse. And of course, when a devotee has Krishna's heart, he has Krishna. And when one has Krishna, he has the most valuable jewel, gift. It's the most valuable treasure. He can't possibly, for a moment, think that there's anything of greater value. Because when you have Krishna, you have everything that comes with him. So, therefore, that is the goal of the sadhaka, is to awaken Krishna's pleasure by the devotion. And when one actually understands the depth of what that actually means, when one actually begins to even get a glimpse by observing the characteristics of such devotion, just like in the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy told Lord Chaitanya, pure devotional service cannot be had even by millions of births of pious activities. Pure devotional service can be obtained only by one price, and that's the intense greed to have it. And therefore, if one sees it someplace, he should immediately purchase it without delay. That's Ramananda Roy tells Lord Chaitanya in their conversation of the nature of how valuable pure devotional service is. And it's, of course, to go on and to describe the satisfaction and pleasure and happiness that one achieves as a result of getting even a drop. What to speak of, even one small drop, as Rupa Goswami says, one small drop of this pure devotional service can actually drown the whole universe. So, Atapiti Deva, what is that? Atapiti Deva Padambuja Dvaya Prasadala Sanagrihita Evihi. Unless one gets a drop of mercy from Krishna's lotus feet, one can never understand the greatness of Krishna's personality. So, of course, that mercy is, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explaining, the devotee should be prepared that I will never give up Krishna's lotus feet. I will go on serving him. Someday he will give me his mercy. Whether it's today, whether it's 10 years from now, whether 100 years from now, whether it's in some future birth. Patience means that I will go on serving Krishna and never leave his lotus feet. So, now to begin. And as I said, I'll try to move quickly and try to make this relevant. For the practitioner of devotional service, dire patience is extremely necessary. Those who possess the quality of dire are called dhira, sober. Due to lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. By the quality of dharya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. These things require explanation. First of all, one important point to understand. He's emphasizing patience is essential, and due to a lack of patience, men become restless, and those who are impatient cannot do any work. So we need to understand what is Bhaktivinoda Thakur talking about. Does it mean he can't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and drive to Los Angeles and go to work because he's too impatient to sit in rush hour traffic for 2 hours? No. We should understand that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is using the word work here, because the whole text of Bhakti Loka is addressed to sadhakas, he's talking about internal work. He's not talking about punching the clock, showing up on time, dealing with the boss, and getting the paycheck at the end of the week. There are many impatient people who do that. But when he says that those who are impatient cannot do any work, he means those who are impatient have a hard time dealing with internal work. And the internal work is what comes next. By the quality of dire, a practitioner first controls first himself and then the whole world. In the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of dire are explained. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasta vegam, itan vegan, yo vishaheta dhira, sarvam, vimam, pritivim sasishat. So this verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, says, is the symptom of dhaya. Does anyone know this verse? Besides Giri Rajamaraj? What is it? Tell me.
The Sanskrit?
No, the English translation.
One who can control the tongue, belly, genitals, the urge to speak, actions of anger, they're considered sober.
And the mind's demands.
And the mind's demands, they're considered sober, and they're qualified to make disciples of everyone.
Uh-huh. Okay. A sober person could tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals are qualified to make disciples all over the world. So, he's saying that the practitioner controls first himself, and then he controls the whole world. So, this is what he's talking about, the internal work. that the practitioner of bhakti yoga has to do. Sometimes we have a tendency to think that the best way to deal with everything that comes into conflict with what I have to do is to control everything else. I have to control. If I control my surroundings and I control all the people around me and put them all in their proper place, then I can move forward. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, no, you got it backwards. He says, if you want to control the whole world, first thing you have to do is control yourself. And therefore he says, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. And then I always like to tell the story. Did I tell the story? You heard that story?
No.
It's perfectly illustrates this point. It's a nice story. I like it. It's not so deep. It's relevant. So there's a story about one of our great acharyas, whose name is Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das was the son of a very wealthy landholder. His name was Govardhan Majumdar. And he was the only child. And to make a long story short, he was very much pampered by his father. The only child, his father was extremely wealthy. And Govardhan was always wanted the best for his son and comfort. In fact, it's described that he tried to protect him even from seeing anything ugly, from seeing anything painful. Wouldn't even let him walk on the ground, but he would actually cover the earth with lotus petals so he wouldn't prick his feet, and have palanquins waiting for him at the palace door so he wouldn't have to walk anywhere. It's really, his father was very much interested to see that his son had the best of everything. And one of the priests, he had two priests, I think. One was Balaramacharya, was Yadunandanacharya. One of his family priests was Balaramacharya, who happened to be a disciple of Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur is well known as a great renunciant who was exclusively dependent on the holy name of the Lord, could not be allured by even Maya Devi herself, an attempt was made by an envious person, Ramachandra Khan, to try to allure Haridas Thakur by sending a prostitute to make him fall from his vows. Haridas Thakur was not in any way allured and was always fully in control of his mind and senses because he had taken complete shelter of the holy name of the Lord and chanted exclusively the holy name of the Lord. Was it 22 hours a day? Something like that. So he was the spiritual master of Balaramacharya. And one time, Haridas Thakur was visiting Balaramacharya nearby in the village. And Balaramacharya had actually built a small kutir where Haridas Thakur could sit and absorb himself in chanting the holy names of the Lord. And Govardhan Majumdar, he was actually a devotee. And he knew the benefit of getting a benediction from a saintly person. So he wanted his son Raghunath to get a benediction from Haridas Thakur. And therefore he requested Balaramacharya to please take my son, Raghunath, to Haridas, who you are hosting in your village, and request on my behalf for Haridas to give a benediction. And because Govardhan Majumdar was very wealthy, he thought that maybe he might be able to inspire Haridas to give a real good benediction by sending a whole cartload of expensive goods, jewelry, silks, and all kinds of opulent gifts. He was thinking, certainly this will be very pleasing to Haridas, and certainly he'll give great benediction to my son when he sees all of this. So Balaramacharya accepted his request and then brought Raghunath Das, who was also accompanied by his guards and his personal servants. They all went with him because Raghunath Das wouldn't go anywhere unless he had his guards and servants arranged by his father. And they went to Haridas Thakur, and then Balaramacharya introduced Haridas and said, Raghunath, and said, this is the son of Govardhan Majumdar, and he sent all of these gifts. And of course, Haridas Thakur considered, he wasn't really interested in the gifts, and he wasn't going to be in any way bribed or swayed, influenced, because he also has control of his mind and senses. And he said, Raghunath's father asked that you give him a benediction. Now, of course, Balaramacharya kind of anticipated that Haridas Thakur might not necessarily give the kind of benediction that Govardhan was hoping for. And therefore, when he said this, and when as Haridas Thakur was about to give the benediction, he made a very loud sound so no one else could hear it. I think it's described that he sneezed or something. And Haridas Thakur, he says, I give you the benediction that you will renounce the whole world. But nobody heard it except Balaramacharya because he made the loud sound. So then Balaramacharya returned along with the guards and the servants and Raghunath Das back to Govardhan, and Govardhan immediately asked the servants, did Haridas Thakur give my son benediction? And the servant said, he said something, but we didn't hear it. And then he went, asked everyone, guards, we didn't hear what he said. So he called Balaramacharya. He said, so, did you ask him to give a benediction? He said, yes, he gave a benediction. He said, well, what did he give him? He said, Raghunath Das, your son, got the benediction from Haridas Thakur that he will control the whole world. As soon as Govardhan heard that, he said, control the whole world. I control this whole tract of land. And look at my opulence. And my son's going to control the whole world. He became ecstatic. So Balaramacharya said he will control the whole world, but why did he say that? Because he got the benediction that nothing in this material world will control it. You will renounce this whole world, which means that nothing in the material world will be able to control him. He will not be controlled by, or tempted by beauty, by wealth, by fame, by anything in this world. Although in this world there are so many allurements, that enticements to that can, which can easily, for a person who can't control his mind, his senses, his tongue, his belly, and gentleness, can easily be manipulated and controlled by such offerings of gratification. That's how the world works. Everybody offers some gratification, and in anticipation of that fulfillment of that gratification, one can be manipulated by the whole world. But Raghunath Das got the benediction that, no, you'll renounce the whole world, which means nothing in the world will be able to control him. And therefore, because nothing can control him, he will be able to control the world. So that is the essence of, you know, of the point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, is that a sadhaka has to be patient, that if he wants someday to get Krishna's mercy, and if he wants Krishna to be pleased by his devotion, he has to be patient. But meanwhile, what does he do while he's being patient? He has to make some effort to learn how to control these six pushings. The urge to speak, the mind's demands, actions of anger, the tongue, the belly, and genitals. As he says, the practitioner of Bhakti Yoga first controls himself, then he controls the world. So therefore, he's going to go on and explain and give a very practical guideline of how one can practice controlling all of these urges and at the same time make progress in spiritual life and in due course of time awaken the pleasure of the Lord by his efforts to work on himself, which is what a sadhaka does. A sadhaka is somebody who works on himself. He's actually internally looking within his own heart to see, have I controlled, can I control the urge to speak? Can I control the mind? Of course. Can I control the actions of anger? You know, tongue, belly, to discuss all of these items is beyond the scope, as I said, of tonight's presentation. I might even to discuss one of these items might be beyond the scope of tonight's presentation. I'll have to leave that up to Sarvatma. But I could really give a very summarized presentation about the first one, which is what everybody finds to be very relevant. Controlling the urge to speak. May I? Okay. Okay, so we'll move on. And as I said, it's a summary. With a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. If speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. To speak uselessly is the business of a fool. But out of a desire to unnecessarily engage in speech, materialists always waste time and face so many distresses. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining here that, again, one has to learn how to control the urge to speak. And he says that people speak more, become talkative, and if the speech is not regulated, then what happens is that one creates enmity because one starts talking about others. Okay, in layman's terms, it's called... Thank you. It's called gossip, yes. But it's actually, if we analyze it, and look a little deeply into this topic, we'll find that actually speaking about others is very natural. It just so happens it's natural because usually for a person who's elevated, he's always talking about Krishna. happens to be somebody else. It's not him. And there are so many verses and so many, there's so many examples in the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, throughout the scriptures, of personalities who spoke uncontrollably. You know, we're talking about to control the urge to speak. But actually, there's some personalities who couldn't control themselves when it came to talking about Krishna. Because that's the nature of topics about Krishna. In fact, there's one verse, it's a beautiful verse, in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, which says, in the place where pure devotees meet, following rules and regulations, in that place, if one gets the opportunity to hear the topics about Krishna, which flow continuously from their mouths like the waves of a river, one will become completely free. One will forget about all kinds of hunger and thirst and become free from all kinds of illusion, lamentation, and fear. This is Narada Muni. He says, you know, it's sort of like when, it's sort of like a tsunami. If you get caught up in a tsunami, you're helpless, right? We read about tsunamis lately. You know, when it flows, it catches everything up and just carries it with it. So Narada Muni gives the example that if you go to the place where pure devotees are not controlling their urge, by continuously speaking about Krishna. In fact, there's another verse, Madhashriya Katamrishta Shrinventi Katiyanti Cha. They engage constantly hearing and speaking about the sadhus never suffer from material miseries because they're always filled with thoughts of my activities and pastimes in this world. There's another verse I oftentimes like to quote from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. He describes the Paramahansas of those who accepted Krishna within the core of the heart. They're attracted to speaking about the topics of Krishna as if they are ever fresh. And they continually speak about the topics of Krishna. They're ever fresh. And he says, they're attracted to speaking about the topics of Krishna in the same way that materialistic persons are attracted to speaking about women and sex. So he's given the example that just as a person, materialistic person, doesn't need to discipline himself and to practice talking about women and sex. It's very spontaneous. And the slight, because why? Because it's always in his heart. So if it's because he's always in his heart and he's always meditating on it, as soon as he sees anything that even closely resembles what's in his heart, it's spontaneous. It just comes up. Just starts talking about it. So he uses that example to illustrate Paramahansas who have accepted Krishna within the core of their heart. They're spontaneously attracted to speaking about Krishna in the same way. Why? Because Krishna is always within the core of their heart. They're always thinking about Him. They're always trying to remember Him. And therefore, they're always spontaneously speaking about Him as if it's ever fresh. So, therefore, Narada Muni gives the example that such persons, they have a natural urge to speak when it's about Krishna. So this is natural. It's our constitutional nature. Even if you take it even farther, step farther, and go to the spiritual world and examine the qualities and characteristics of the residents of the spiritual world, we'll see that even those devotees who are eternal associates of the Lord, they're always gathering in groups and talking about Krishna. When Uddhava comes to see Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj is immediately talking about his son. You know, where's my son? Where is he? Why is he gone? Why hasn't he come back? Why isn't he thinking about his parents here who are suffering and separation from him? When Uddhava goes to the gopis start complaining about where is that young boy who came, took our hearts, just like a bee who comes to a flower and extracts the nectar of the flower and then leaves and then doesn't care anything about the flower anymore. Krishna is complaining. They're speaking about Krishna in this way. So even in the spiritual world, they're talking about Krishna. Point is Speaking about others is natural when it's about Krishna. The problem is that natural proclivity to speak about Krishna, if it's not spontaneous, needs to be controlled when devotees get to, or when people get together, because that natural tendency to speak about somebody else becomes perverted, and then one starts speaking about everyone else. Oh, did you see what he did? Did you see what she did? Or did you know that he did this or she did that? Or sometimes I say, I'm going to tell you something very confidential, but don't tell anybody, okay? I'm going to just tell just you, but please don't tell anybody that I told you this, okay? So it's almost like saying that I'm telling you something very confidential because you're confidential, so you can tell somebody else who's confidential to you. And everybody always has somebody confidential they can tell. So before you know it, it's like... So Bhaktivinoda Thakur analyzes this tendency. He analyzes it. And he gives... And I'll get right to the point so that we don't go past, hopefully, 8:30. I'll read something in this connection. Sorry. Oh, here it is. Talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So, he's explaining that, okay, if you're a sadhaka, and the goal is to fix your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, which is the goal of the sadhaka, is to always fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. He's saying right here, right now, you'll never be able to fix your mind on the lotus feet of Krishna if you have this tendency to speak about others without reason. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. We can go into detail, but I don't want to go into detail because I think it's self-evident what's being said there. Talking about others should be rejected in all respects. That's not an easy one either, is it? How to stop talking about others in all respects. He said, but in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, even though they were about others. In order to completely renounce talking about others, one needs to live in the forest. So, you might feel some relief by these statements. Well, at least, okay, there's some justification I can talk about others. The two different types of practicing devotees are householders and renunciates. Because the renunciates have no business whatsoever with sense enjoyment, they can give up talking about others in all respects. Well, we'll have to talk about that, Giriraj Maharaj. when will the day be ours, huh? But because a householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. It is best for him to live in a Krishna-conscious family. When all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and a part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. He should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone. Should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna conscious family. He should not talk about others without reason. That can be without reason. What is a good reason to talk about others? And therefore he's going to go on to explain what are good reasons to talk about others. How is it justifiable? And he gives different examples. I won't read it all. I'll summarize it. Basically he says, like when a guru has to instruct his disciples, sometimes he has to point to bad examples. Because otherwise, the disciple may not be able to understand unless he says, this is something you shouldn't do. So he gives the example of Shukadeva Goswami, who's instructing Parikshit Maharaj, and he says, he's talking about envious householders. He says, the lifetime of such envious householders is passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime, either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of atmatattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible souls like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Although Sukadeva Goswami talks about materialism in order to instruct his disciples, he's not considered a prajalpi. Therefore, such activities should be considered beneficial. In other words, what he's saying is that sometimes when giving instructions, sometimes one has to give an example and say, be careful. Don't be like this. You have to use an example. Don't be like this. It will be detrimental to your spiritual life. Sometimes one may even be able to say it, even speaking about a particular person, although not naming him. And Lord Chaitanya did that. He gives another example. In order to instruct his own disciples, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about pseudo renunciates in the following words from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he says, Lord Chaitanya said, I cannot tolerate seeing the face of a person who has accepted the renounced order of life, but who still talks intimately with a woman. There are many persons with little in their possession who accept the renounced order of life like monkeys. They go here and there engaging in sense gratification, speaking intimately with women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my mind is not under my control. It does not like to see anyone in the renounced order who talks intimately with women. This is Lord Chaitanya is actually speaking about somebody, not naming him, Chota Haridas. And he's instructing his disciples and making the point clear. He's speaking about somebody who's saying, well, why are you talking about Chota Haridas? But he has to do it to make the point clear. And then he goes on and gives other examples, which sometimes it may be necessary even to name the person. Same principle. When Maitreya Muni was speaking about Vena Maharaj, he was specifically naming him and speaking about his bad qualities and how a person has to be very careful. So the point he makes is that sometimes it may be necessary to speak about others, to conclude a topic, and it's while instructing others. But when speaking about others, he concludes the topic by saying, when speaking about others, those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. In other words, as long as one's heart is not free from envy, pride, hatred, or desire for distinction, one should not speak about others at all. In this way. So he's giving a practical example of how to control the urge to speak. It's practical. Everybody can understand that, there's a tendency to speak about somebody else. But before we speak, we can look within our own hearts and say, is it necessary to say this? Do I have to say this to this person? Why am I saying it? What am I trying to accomplish? Am I simply trying to turn everybody's attention to this person so he'll think he's bad, so that people will think I'm good? Because unfortunately, that's the nature of envy. The nature of envy is if you can make everybody else look bad, you look great. It's one of the symptoms of envy. An envious person is always, the symptom of envy is they're always trying to push others down. Because if they push everyone down, everyone's below me. Here I am. I'm on top. So sometimes to accomplish that, and that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says specifically, one has to be very careful to make sure his heart is free from envy. Is he saying this because it's constructive? And oftentimes what happens is we may say something about somebody else, and it goes around, and it comes back to the person, and the person says, why didn't he approach me first? Why am I getting it like this? It creates enmity. Creates enmity. And the result and this is the real essence of the issue, is that when Vaishnava culture is not practiced and not understood about when to speak about others and when not to speak about others, then the difficulty is that because of the atmosphere which is generated by that, it's very difficult to have confidential relationships. Because the very nature of confidential relationship means dadati patagrihani kuryati akimpachati, is that one of the symptoms of love between one devotee and another is to confidentially reveal one's mind and confidence to another Vaishnava. And to inquire confidentially means, it doesn't mean you, as soon as somebody tells you something, you put it on the internet. And the problem is because people don't know how to control the urge to speak. So many people are afraid to speak openly with anybody. Because as soon as they say something, they think, where's it going to go? Who's going to hear it? Who's going to know about it next? And it's very painful to the heart. Very painful to the heart when you can't speak in confidence to anybody because you live in constant fear. That's what's going to come back to me. From where? From whom? That's not Vaishnava culture. Vaishnava culture are those who understand the principles of Vaishnavism, who are sadhakas, who are practicing these principles, and they're learning how to control the urge to speak. Of course, when spontaneous attraction to speak about Krishna is awakened in the heart, automatically control is there. But until that point, we need to practice. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, be patient. Be patient. The day will come when these things will manifest and Krishna will be pleased. He'll give you full mercy, pure devotional service. But don't just sit idly and be patient. Do something. Do your work. Do your internal work. This is a sadhaka. Somebody who does his internal work. He's patient, but he goes on working. And therefore he discusses the urge to speak, and then the mind's demands in a similar way, the actions of anger, how to deal with anger, and tongue, belly, genitals. Sorry. I spoke a little bit longer then. Probably should. Any questions?
Said that when one takes the devotional service, jnana and vairagya is an automatic byproduct of devotional service.
Bhakti Yoga Bhagavati. Mm-hmm.
So it seems like you're caught in a very difficult situation. Unless you become pure, you don't become. You don't get the knowledge or become renounced. At the same time, you know, how do you become renounced without the devotion?
Right, you want to answer a question? It means as always, what you're saying, it appears to be cyclical without...
Yeah, it's like, almost cyclical. So you can't get into it.
We understand that cycle can be broken by divine intervention. And divine intervention means that by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and by the mercy of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, who are actually true servants of Lord Chaitanya, who have come to selflessly give devotional service, that they are giving that mercy before we even qualify for it. We may, in fact, as we understand, our only qualification in Kali Yuga is that we're unqualified. We're the most fallen. So we're really dependent upon Krishna's mercy manifest in the form of his mercy from his devotees. Just like Prabhupada says that, I think it was, I can't remember his commentary to something, but he was describing how previously Krishna came and he established a condition. He said, Sarvadhamma Prichaja Mamikam Sharanam Bhaja. He said, first you abandon all varieties and surrender unto me, and then I'll deliver you. So he established the condition that first you have to surrender to me. But Lord Chaitanya, when he came, he took that condition away. He said, take. He took the first step. He actually, by his divine presence and intervention, he didn't take into consideration our surrendered status. He gave before we were even qualified. So, because he intervened through the mercy of his devotees, that cycle is broken. Just by that intervention. Only thing we have to do is take. Just take what is being given to us. What is it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Lord Chaitanya has come and says, please simply take this Maha Mantra. Make your life perfect. And Prabhupada gives that example also of a child who's attracted to playing with knives. He says, if you try to take a knife away from the child, it becomes more dangerous because the child will resist. So he says, parents instead, rather than taking the knife away from the child, they give the child a nice colorful toy. And the child, to take the toy, in order to take the toy, has to drop the knife. So that is our renunciation. We're being given the colorful toy. Let's take it. But in order to take it, we have to drop the knife. So in order to fully embrace that which is being given to us, Lord Chaitanya is taking the first step and giving us, saying, take it. And he's always asking us, just take. And if we actually take it, really take it, then what happens? Knowledge and vairagya will follow. What is that verse? I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Vasudeva
Vagudhi Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Shayada had to come. Yes. By rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one automatically acquires knowledge and detachment from this world. Vishayava Nivartate Naraharasya Dehi Narasa Vajam Rasopya Saparam Just Parnivartate. The body and soul may be restricted from the sense enjoyment, though the taste still remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, it becomes fixed in consciousness. It's the whole essence. But the problem is that although Lord Chaitanya has come to give, and he's just asking us simply to take, if we're not careful, and we commit offenses, then that will obstruct our progress in spiritual life. Do you want to add something, Mark?
It's just another side to the devotee's mercy. It's mentioned many places. It's also mentioned later in Bhakti Loka that by associating with devotees,
by associating with devotees, pure devotees, one observes their behavior. And all these different obstacles, like you mentioned here about, you know, envy and hatred and desire for distinction, those become removed by associating with pure devotees. So that's it's the same idea, but it's a practical program. You know, associate with pure devotees, observe them, and somehow by their influence, those obstacles that give rise to the fault of speaking about others in the wrong way go away. And, you know, this, knowledge and renunciation following, that follows. In another book, I think, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses how in the beginning we get the seed of pure devotional service from a pure devotee. But then, because of not executing devotional service properly, the purity, the pure seed becomes mixed with other desires, and we also see practically that devotees who begin very enthusiastic and very strict, they lose their enthusiasm and become loose and go down. So then how to come up again? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's in the same vein, by associating with pure devotees. The inspiration for pure devotional service that one had initially becomes revived. And the other desires are the weeds that have sprouted up alongside the creeper of pure devotion. They become weakened and uprooted. So, yeah, whenever we get the chance for that kind of association, we should take it. Go out of our way to get it. Hare Krishna.